Welcome to the Pitchology Podcast with me, your host, Steve DeStante. Discover the best strategies entrepreneurs use to raise capital to help their businesses scale and grow. Hear personal stories of what people did in order to be able to figure out that next level of their business, which required capital. Whether you're a successful entrepreneur or simply aspiring to join the world of entrepreneurship, capital raising is often a very vital part of your growth and success. Welcome, everybody, to this episode of The War and Art of Funding. And today I've got the insider on creating those decks that really work, Maximilian Fightman. How are you doing today, Max?
Yeah, I'm doing really good. Thanks for taking the time.
Yeah, it's my pleasure. So you're a fellow EO member, the Entrepreneurs Organization from Berlin.
Yeah, and, correct.
How big a chapter do you guys have over there?
Well, I think it's between 100 to 200 people.
Oh, man, I'm going to have to come there. I'm going to have to come party with you guys.
Yeah, absolutely. Come over anytime.
So Berlin's an interesting place. It had an East and a West Berlin, right?
Yes.
So how did you get to Berlin? Did you just move there recently because it's a cool place to go, or?
Yeah, I think if you're talking about like the whole startup and entrepreneurial ecosystem, there's only like one place where you can go here in Germany. And Berlin is like this hotspot, this melting pot where all the people from around Europe come to like live out their dreams and build cool companies. And I think over the last maybe 20 years, there are so many great companies that were founded here in Berlin, and it's getting bigger and bigger every day. And I think right now, like a huge part of the people that work in Berlin are somehow related to the startup ecosystem.
Oh, that's so cool. So I don't know if you know this, my mom is German. She comes from Frankfurt.
Oh, okay.
The area. And I've been to Germany many times. I love it. I've driven the Rhine. I've been to Dresden and all sorts of places. So North Sea, got to stay in some of the islands up there, Hamburg, Oktoberfest. I mean, yeah, you guys know how to have some fun over there.
That's right.
Yeah. But I don't remember, and this is just my personal memory of Germany being entrepreneurial. It was a very kind of strict society, and it was a it was like, if you want to go to college, and this now I have cousins in Germany, right? If you want to go to college and you didn't do well in class in eighth grade, let's say, they sent you off to trade school perhaps, and you couldn't choose to be a mechanic. If they needed people who were going to be plumbers, you were going to be a plumber. And that's how it was. Have they changed? Is Germany different now?
Yeah, it's so interesting that you talk about this, because I would describe Germans as people that are taking calculated risks. So I think it's still in our DNA that we are afraid to lose anything that we build up from the ground again. I think this is somehow related to the Second World War, because after the Second World War, we had to like get going again and again. And I think there are still most of the people like this a little bit, risk averse. And I also saw this with the people I studied with. So their goal was to work in a big corporate job where they had like their 40 hours week, get their paycheck and everything's fine. But I think there is like this small percentage of Germans, and it's also it also has something to do with the culture, especially here in Berlin, with all the different nationalities that come over that are like looking for ways to take these risks and really found great companies. Mm. And I think it's like the beginning of the second big wave of German like mega companies that are coming right out now. And yeah, I'm really, really happy to be part of this wave and create some amazing companies.
Cool. So somebody wants to describe Germany and Italy, like the personalities, because you guys are really close to each other. It's like states in the US, right?
Yes.
So in Italy, you ask somebody, and I'm Italian and German, so put that out there right now. In Italy, you say, when's it going to be done? And it's like, maybe in July, maybe in August, whatever, right? It's a little bit more laid back type of romantic society. And in Germany, it's like 3:34 p.m. on July 16th. This will be done. And we may be done early. And I just like the precision.
Yeah, I think it's quite interesting. I think Germans are really, really like all around processes. And I would describe most of them more on the analytical side of like character traits. And we are like really, really good in improving things. So you can see this in the automotive industry, that we are really, really good to be 1% better every year, for example. But I think this is not the way how we can build the next great companies, because you won't like build the next big like Facebook or Tesla when you're improving the things you already have just with 1% every year. Mm. But you have to like really like shoot for the moon to get like these really huge successes.
There you go. Well, I can't wait to get back to Germany. I don't know if you were at the Global Leadership Conference that was in
Frankfurt.
Yeah. I actually got to visit my cousin when I was there, and it was nice. I think Berlin would have been better.
Yes.
Got to be honest. That would have been a better choice.
Yeah. Frankfurt is like, it's still all these old banks and stuff like that. And what I see right now is really, really interesting, that like some years, maybe like 10 years ago, all the smart people from university wanted to go to like into investment banking or into consulting. And now like all the smart people from the universities want to go into startup, and they are really thinking about founding their own or learning from scratch. And I think like a huge driver behind that is that you can like fulfill your own dreams and really live out your strengths. And I deeply believe in that wealth comes from equity, owning equity in a company. And you won't get wealthy working as an investment banker, because like, yeah, you get a nice paycheck, but the huge like step changes for your personal wealth will only happen if you, if you're owning like equity in a company, for example.
I couldn't agree with you more, which is a topic of our conversation today. So you've got two businesses. You're a member of EO Berlin. You've got Richmond View Ventures. Could you tell us, your 30-second elevator pitch on that one? What is Richmond View Ventures?
Yeah, so Richmond View Ventures is an investment firm, and we are investing into like software as a service and direct to consumer startups. And our approach is not like the classic venture capitalist, but we are entrepreneurs ourselves and in our heart, and we are investing a money into your company to fuel the next growth. But we are also investing a lot of our time so that we can spend, for example, one day a week with you as our portfolio company. Oh. And I've never seen any investor do this before, but we deeply believe in relationships between teams that are already on a really great path to success. And we want to give them some tailwinds out of our expertise and experience that we had over the last 15, 20 years being an entrepreneur.
That's awesome. Yeah, I find that entrepreneurs really like to invest in entrepreneurs.
Yes, absolutely. And I think for us, fun. Yeah, there's this huge difference, because we were thinking about like also investing in businesses that had like CEOs or C-level executives that were hired. But it's a whole different play if you work with a fellow entrepreneur or if you work with like someone who was hired as a manager.
Yeah. Oh, without a doubt. Because if you get the right entrepreneur, and you probably have identified this, their life won't be complete unless they do this business. Does that sound about accurate?
Yeah. And it's for them, it's not about work. So like I would never describe my day as work and free time. But for me, like living as an entrepreneur, it's my dream, and I enjoy every minute of it. And it could be eating out with other fellow entrepreneurs and learning about that. But it could also be sitting in front of my computer, like rocking some Excel sheets.
There you go. I love that. I love that. I am of the same mindset. We are big dreamers, and we love to use our businesses as our art, as our way of being able to show the world who we are as humans. So as artists are concerned, sometimes the biggest stumbling block we have is being able to share that picture. So my wife and I work together. Heidi and I have been married for 33 years, and Heidi is CEO or CEO of our companies, and I am chairman and founder, and she's good at all of the nuances. She goes down into the details and all that other stuff. And early in our marriage, we learned that she would get overwhelmed when I would start to describe these details. And I'd have to draw pictures to describe to her what the heck I was talking about. And so I would do that, and then I'd go, come on, 30,000 feet, keep coming up. Like, she'd always dive down into the weeds. And a lot of people are like that, especially when you're dealing with investors and trying to pitch what it is you're doing. And so I'm writing the book. I'm showing people the way. I want to be a hero to entrepreneurs, to give them a fair chance at raising capital. And in doing that, people have been sending me pitch decks, just trying to pitch me. And I invest in some companies, but usually they vomit on me everything that they ever thought of or heard of. And the decks I get are so intricate and detailed. They mean a lot to them, and I have no interest or idea. And usually the conversation starts like this. So did you get a chance to go through my deck? And I go, no. Why not? Because it's your version of reality, and I don't know what the hell you're talking about. So I'd have to sit there spending hours trying to figure out what you're talking about. So your company is called basetemplates.com, right? And could you tell us what Base Templates does?
Yeah, so basically, Base Templates helps founders raise capital. The idea came back in the day because when I go back to the first time I raised capital for my company, I had no clue what the heck I was doing. I think there are like two types of people. The first type of people are the ones that are really, really good at fundraising. And the second type are people that aren't good at fundraising. And I always thought to myself, oh, maybe in the second category, there are people that have a great business idea, a business that could change the world, but they are not able to attract any funding because they really don't know how it works, or because they are from a group of people that are not so like pushed by the classic venture capitalists. And yeah, basically we are helping with three areas. The first area, we are producing a lot of content around the whole topic of fundraising, and we are really trying to help the founders get to the next level and learn from the experiences of others. The second big area for us is creating templates. So from a pitch deck template to financial model, just for the ones that are starting out to see, oh, okay, the pitch decks should be structured into these slides, and maybe it's a good idea to include these information. And then the third area is just consulting work, where we work together really close with founders and help them craft their story, their pitch deck, but also everything around their strategy regarding fundraising to really get them funded and go back to like growing their business. Because I really think that fundraising takes too much time for most of founders. So they are taking hundreds of meetings, 6 months, and in that time they could create real value for their startup. So I really think fundraising should be a short period of time, but then you really have to push and bring the company to the next level.
So entrepreneurs going out and raising capital,
yeah,
is a big distraction, you said, right?
Absolutely.
So it stops you from being able to do your primary business. So how do you deal with that? What is the, you know, how do you not blow up your business in the process of trying to raise capital?
Yeah. So I think the first really, really important part, if you are working as a team, there should only be one person, like the one who is running the fundraise. Because if you start out with like maybe you have three co-founders and all of them are going to the meetings and taking the decisions regarding the process, you won't get anything done in your main business. And the second part, if you choose the one person who is going to be responsible for the fundraise, then you are going to think about a really structured process. So I would start like in a funnel logic where you have a potential list of investors. And I really, really would suggest talking to a lot of them. So big funnel on the top. And then you are really, really narrowing it down to the ones you want to work with. And the whole process shouldn't take much longer than maybe 10 to 12 weeks at maximum. And if you are the one who is like running the process, you are in charge and can like really improve the speed of the process.
Sounds logical, as a German would say. It's perfect. And I love the way that you spell perfect with a K. Yeah. I actually spell perfect with a K also, just because it's the wrong way of spelling it. I try to go this thing called progress, not perfection, right? So a lot of times we'll try to perfect this process and it's a very imperfect process. So an entrepreneur wants to raise capital for a reason. And is it after they've exhausted that they don't want to go to a bank, or they don't want to, is that the first steps in the process? Because, okay, so there's a couple things that I've learned in this process of writing a book. One is, an investor wants to know, have you invested your own money, entrepreneur person, right? That's the first one. Second one is, have you gone the friends and family route? That's the second question. And if the answer is no to both of those, sometimes there's an out, and the out is that you are a seasoned entrepreneur and this is a new venture, because then you have a proven track record. Does that sound about accurate to you?
Yeah, but I would say like the whole family and friends route is something that is quite US specific. So here in Europe, it's not so common to go this route, and investors would prefer not to have like too many people on the cap table that don't have an idea what's going on for the next years. So, but I think I would agree, they want to see your commitment. And if you can give that commitment in terms of like money that you invested in the company, or your time could also be a huge commitment that investors love to see. This is the first check they can do. And then they will have a lot of other checks that they have to check down the road, because for them it's always around, they think, how successful can this be, and how high is the percentage that this will be successful. And like, you really have to give them logical dots that help them make their decision.
Got it. And so let's go through some of those logical dots. Would you mind?
Yeah, sure. Thinking about an early stage investment, I think the most important thing that you can show is that you have a great founding team. So in the early stages, investors will invest in people and not in companies. So if you, Steve, have some track record building companies, solving problems, this is a great, great thing to start. And I would always like ask myself the question, why is our team the best team to solve this mission? And if you can cross all the ideas around that, that's good. But a lot of the time, something is missing. And in my experience, you should be quite transparent about this with the investor. So maybe some technical guy is missing, or a salesperson that you should like hire really, really quick in your founding team. And if you got all the checks for your team, I think for most investors, it's about understanding how your brain works. So starting from, how did this idea evolve to found this startup? Who had the problem? What was your thinking around everything you did till this point? Because this really helps them to learn more about how you will think going forward. And one example could be to be really transparent about problems or struggles that you already had during the founding phase of your business. And this is something that most founders won't do, because they think, oh, I have to hide my problems and all the stuff I did wrong. But I would encourage you to really, really talk about this, because it will really help to bond with the investor. And they are also like humans, and they also doing a lot of mistakes. But it's really, really important to learn from these mistakes and not do them again. And other like check marks that I would look for are, for example, is your product solving a real problem? Because I see a lot of founders that come to me and they assume they have found some product market fit. They are telling me, oh, yeah, I have my product market fit. But in reality, they don't have it. So it's, in my experience, it's really, really easy to go the first step and get the first revenues or the first million of revenue, because you will always find someone who is interested in any kind of product. I don't know why, but it is like this. But to really use an investment wisely, you should have found a way to really scale the business from A to B. Could be, for example, that you are you found your ideal customer, and it's like B2B organizations that sell learn management systems or anything like this. And you know, if you can pour in money in your AdWords or wherever you are winning this customer, this is a really, really strong sign for the investor. Okay, the guys really know what they are doing, and I really want to be part of this.
Got it. So great to get to know the entrepreneur. And interesting, people are interested in people before they're interested in the company, like you said, right? So, you know, I did
it. Yeah, a good example is for the thing that you talked earlier about. So investors will always invest like in serial entrepreneurs, although maybe most of the time they don't even have a concrete idea for their next venture. But they are really thinking, okay, he has gone the whole way before, and he knows like to leave out 50% of the hiccups this time. So this just can be a great journey.
Yeah, I guess. So I like to call all of those mistakes that we've made tuition. So when you lose money, when you waste a lot of time, you learn not to do that again. Because if you're doing it again, well, shame on us, right? But if you've learned from that experience, and that's what I think an investor would be very happy about, is if a person has been through these experiences, their likelihood of success is much, much, much greater. You know. So absolutely. I'm gonna put one out there that maybe you haven't seen before. I'm seeing this strange relationship with college students who come up with an idea in college, which is it's okay. But they feel obligated to continue to carry the torch on that business idea. And it's meh. It's like not so amazing. I don't know if you've ever run into those type of businesses, but I've been running into a lot of those. And I have a soft spot for students. But the truth is, their ideas are great. Glad you started. But I don't know that, quite honestly, this is a business that's scalable. Do you run into that from time to time?
Yeah, I think a lot of time. And I think like this is something, it was a situation there where I was also in, like when you're sitting in a company and it grows and it works, but it's not like, it's not a real case that is like exponential, or where you're sitting in a rocket ship, come on, let's go. And then you're finding yourself, what the heck am I doing here? Like, getting better 1% every year or something. And yeah. I think you really have to be bold and fail really hard and quick if you do it. So there's nothing worse than running around with a business under your seat that is doing okay. You really want to have the passion where you're going the next steps and improving quickly. And I think it's really, really hard to like shut down a business or jump out of a business that you are owning, because it's still your baby. But I would encourage everyone to do that a lot earlier than they are doing it most of the time.
Yeah, learn to walk away if it's not working or so. Interesting. And another thing you said, which I thought was interesting, was that entrepreneurs often this is my interpretation, don't know how to tell their story real well. And often they'll go out and you have people who are not fundraisers, entrepreneurs who aren't fundraisers. They don't have the pitch down. They don't know how to go out there. And it reminded me of a thing that Dan Sullivan from Strategic Coach had taught me. He's one of my coaches. And Dan had said, entrepreneurs are either simplifiers or multipliers. And I don't know if you've ever heard that terminology before, but a simplifier takes a complex idea, business, or whatever, and simplifies it to its basic pieces. And a multiplier is a person who goes out and sells it. So we'll talk about, you know, Steve Jobs from Apple. He was the multiplier. He didn't do Steve Wozniak is the one who did all of the, you know, behind the scenes in the laboratory building things. And Steve Jobs was the guy out there on the stage, black t-shirt, jeans, you know, the look, right? And so when an entrepreneur is trying to raise capital and they're not a multiplier, it's so important for them to get their pitch succinct. And often I'll coach entrepreneurs to tell stories that are engaging, right? So people get to hear the stories because your mind starts to blossom and people start to see the genius or the entrepreneur that you really are. Is this resonating with you a little bit?
Absolutely. So I always think about this. You have to take the investor on a journey and you have to take them on your journey. And you do this like with every slide or every sentence that you're telling. You want them to nod with their head and like it should feel like they are solving the problem you are solving really, really quick. If you get that done, they will invest in your company. The thing that you don't want to do is to give them ways where they are thinking, oh no, this cannot work, this cannot work, this metric is maybe too low, I'm not so interested. But if you can paint the picture of where you are going as a company and just take them on the ride, it's so important to do that, and it will really, really help you. And I think it's especially important for like analytical people. So I think most of the good fundraisers are more like salesy people. And I would describe myself more on the analytical side. So I would present all these numbers, really, really nice charts and all of that. But sometimes like it's better to leave out a lot of this information, because in the end, it's all about the attention that you can get from the investor. And you really have to think for yourself, what are the main informations that I want them to focus on? And I don't know whether this should be the like numbers of your last quarter or something like this. You have to really take them on the bigger journey, because the journey will like go on for years. Like maybe the time between an investment and an exit is like, I think the average is around 7 years or something like this. So don't talk about like the next quarter or the quarter after. Talk about where you will stand in 2 years, in 3 years, in 4 years, in 5 years, so that they really feel, okay, this is going to be big.
I couldn't agree with you more. So Max, one of the things I do when I'm sitting interviewing entrepreneurs like we are right now is I get into their heads, and there's an inflection point. There's a moment where all of a sudden they forget they're actually being interviewed and they start to dream. They start to illustrate in words what their thoughts are. And you know, again, we're both part of EO, the Entrepreneurs Organization. And there's a guy named Hugh Massey. You may have heard of him. He's in the US. I think he's going to be one of our chairmen in the future. And Hugh Massey and I did an experiment, a survey, and we determined that 70% of entrepreneurs are introverted.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It's a large percentage.
Okay.
And that means we live in our heads. We got a circus going on in our heads.
Yeah, I can tell you.
You got the same thing, right?
Yeah, I have the circus going on like 24/7. I was just recently on holidays, and it was like so difficult for me to like stop thinking about like anything. And it took me like 3 days to like cool down the system. And then I had like my 2 days of holidays, and then I was like right back in it and thinking about how could I do this or how could I do that. It's crazy.
It's wild, right? So for entrepreneurs, I know you said there's like these people who are salesy and so on, but what I like to coach people to do is to go to the roots of why they're doing what they're doing. And if you get it right, I mean, the entrepreneur is doing it right, they would feel like their life wasn't complete if they didn't do this business, this particular business. And if you can get them into that state of existence and feel comfortable telling the story, and what I like to do, I do a lot of public speaking, I'll take some index cards and I'll just put a word or two words on it. They tell a story. You know, my opening story is I was born an entrepreneur when I was 6 years old. Well, I'll bring you to the moment. And that's what you like to do, bring people to a moment. I'm 6 years old. It's 7:30 in the morning. I just get out of bed. I go into the little red barn behind my house. And there it is, my wheelbarrow and pitchfork. And I take it, I drag it up this very steep hill, which is located behind my house. And there's a sandy trail where horses would go. And there it is. The sun is rising and the steamy pile of horse manure is just been laid. I don't see the horse, but I see the horse manure. And I go about my business. I put it inside the wheelbarrow and I find another couple that are maybe not as fresh. I take it down to my neighborhood where I see Ms. Barker tending to her garden. I look at her and she looks at me and she goes, "Good morning, Stephen. I see you have some food for my plants." And I say, "Yes." She hands me a dollar and her blue sparkling eyes look at me and smile. She goes, "Thank you for doing this. My tomatoes are going to be tremendously happy as a result of this. Thank you so much." I'm an entrepreneur, and the way I communicate with people is through business. And since I've been a child, I've been using that interaction of business as my way of communicating with the world. I'm introverted. I don't like to just go out and start chatting with people about nothing. I prefer to have purpose. That's how I start. I get people engaged in the moment just so they have an idea of who I am. I've been doing this all my life. It gives them assurances. And then I kind of go in to give them a little bit more of a purpose and why I'm doing what I'm doing and so on and so forth. So I think the storytelling gives us the ability to dig real deep inside our souls. And a lot of times we don't even think about that. We think people want to know numbers and projections and this, that, and the other thing. What do you think of that?
I think your story is like step one and everything else is step two.
There you go.
An investor, like the story, the numbers could be great and the projections could be great, but an investor won't invest in your business like if step one is not working. Like if you as an entrepreneur don't have the passion to really get this thing going. Because like I always look for people that won't stop their journey when the first bump is coming up just because they are doing it for any kind of like money or any stupid reason. But if you have the passion to really, and you know your why you're doing this business, you won't stop if a bump comes or a huge hole comes. You just will go straight further down the road. And in my experience, there is no business in the world, and even like the biggest businesses, they all had their bumpy roads down the way. So as an entrepreneur, you really have to go beyond that.
Without a doubt. Yeah, those are the best circumstances because it means it's difficult to enter into that business. You've figured it out. You know, as Tony Robbins likes to say, being an entrepreneur is not about having resources. It's about being resourceful, figuring things out. we're not the wealthy, because YPO has that, right? That's all the people who were born on third base and feel like they got a home run when they hit 100 million or so. I'm teasing YPOers, please don't beat me up. I was joking. But you know, we put it all on the line, right?
Yeah. So as an entrepreneur, I'm glad for every warm meal I can get, right?
That's awesome. So okay, we've got your base templates, and I'm an entrepreneur. I want to jump right in and learn how to do this. What does base templates do for me? Why would I want to be part of that? And got to be honest, I think we're going to end up doing something at the end of this book that allows people to jump into base templates in a unique way. Would you be up for that?
Yeah, absolutely. So basically, if you want to talk to fellow entrepreneurs that already like made the experience of raising millions in capital and want to get their expertise to craft your story, your deck, and really help you run your fundraise, we are the right like choice to do that. And also, like if you just want to talk to someone around your thoughts around the whole fundraising, feel free to connect anytime with us. And we are really, our passion is like to bring entrepreneurs to the next level and really help them get the money they need to fulfill their passion, to live out their dream.
So are you doing yet like groups, or pretty much you have a subscription service, or is it subscription? Is it just pay one time?
It's just a pay one time, because like, it's really, really specific to the person that's coming to us. And some sort of people just need help with their design. Some need help with their vision around their fundraising. And some just need like some sparring around their strategy on when is the right timing or something like this. And we are really, really want to have this specific tailored to you.
Got it. So you'll help entrepreneurs to develop their pitch, their deck, their story, and so on. That's awesome. That's great. That's a huge service for people. I mean, just buying in on the templates is inexpensive, right? How much is it in US dollars?
Yeah, I think it starts with around $40. So
it's nothing.
It's nothing.
It's right. Nothing.
The funny part is always like people want to raise millions and millions of dollars, but they don't want to like spend anything on like any consulting or thinking it through. So I would really encourage you to do that and really think about how you can bring your pitch to the next level, because it will be so, so helpful down the road.
Extraordinarily valuable, right? That's like the most important thing. I always look at investing in yourself as the best investment you could make.
Yeah. And for all of the people that just wants to get a sense of all the stuff we are doing, we have also a lot of like free tools. So for example, a cool thing that we built recently is an investor pitch training, where we collected, I think, around 200 questions from real like investor pitches, and you can train for yourself. And the value is in refining your own story for yourself or with your friends. And then you can go out with your refined deck and pitch to the next investor.
Amazing. So people can go to basetemplates.com, subscribe, and then inside there you get a login, and then you can start to look at some of the resources and tools that are in there.
Yeah, you don't have to register. You can just do it when like clicking on basetemplates.com, go to the resources section, and then you will get a lot of valuable content out of like the head of hundreds of entrepreneurs that have done it before.
Fantastic. That's an amazing experience. And then you do investment banking for some, or venture capital for some entrepreneurs, right? You are in that business in Germany, is it?
Yeah. So we are investing ourselves, but this is like a different business than Base Templates. Base Templates just like fulfills more of my passion around encouraging and enabling founders. So this is why I love to do it. And yeah, we are also like investing ourselves, because this was also another part of like my passion. And my own personal purpose is like enabling growth for me, but also for others.
And you get personally involved with those companies, right?
Yes.
Got it. That's got to be a heavy lift to go in there, and you sit on a board of directors or so. What is your role?
Yeah, so it really depends on the stage of the company. It could be a board role, but it could also be a little so more active than a board role as well. So recently, we did an investment where we are really working together one day a week with the company over the time of 12 months to really bring them to the next level. But I think this is really, really valuable. And this is a model that is not so common, because like the regular way is just throwing money out and hoping that it will come back. But we are really entrepreneurs by our heart, and we love to work together with fellow entrepreneurs. So we are really, really picky when it comes to our investments. And we are not doing this like a hidden hope where we shoot out the money and hope that it comes back. But we are really, we want to bring every single company to a success if we invest.
Amazing. So as we close, I just want to ask you about systems and processes that companies use. So I use a company called MAP, Management Action Programs, which their first client was Coca-Cola. Former EO chairman Michael Cato is the is now the chairman and CEO of the company. We got Vern Harnish is scaling up, right, which is a process. You got EOS, the entrepreneurial, there you go. And we're going to have that interview on here as well. We've got EOS, which is the entrepreneurial operating system, which is Gino Wickman. Gino's also a strategic coach guy with Dan Sullivan. Processes or systems matter for an entrepreneur, because when you pop into your GPS, you know, anywhere, you're going nowhere, right? And if you pop into your GPS, this is where I'm going, you have goals, you have your ability to try to monitor your business. That's super important to me. And I don't know if you look at that when you're looking at a company and have companies talk about it. I would assume 99% of companies don't have some sort of system like this, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So what we are trying to do, if a company already has a system, this is a huge plus for us, because we can also like look back in their heads and see what they did like 1 year ago, one quarter ago, how the mission, the vision changed over the time. And we really encourage every company that is not using any kind of system right now to start right away using it. So like most of the time, like onboarding scale up is like the first thing we do with the company.
So you're a scale-up coach or no?
No, we have like experience from our own companies where we implemented that, but we are also using like scale-up coaches to help the companies to implement that.
I see. So that's a big, so systems matter.
Yes, for us Germans, it's huge. I love systems.
There you go. Well, I think a good company, regardless if you're German or
that's right,
is you need to have some system that's backing you up, because otherwise you're going nowhere. Good deal. So you're using scaling up as your primary. Got it. Yeah. And it was Rockefeller Habits prior to that, I suppose.
Yeah.
Got it. And that works really well. A lot of people in the Berlin chapter use scaling up.
Yeah, I think it's like the more common system here around here compared to like EOS from Gino.
But
I think it's not about like which system is better or worse. Like it's about having a system, and it could be A, could be B, but could be also like the one that you developed yourself. It's just around like getting your processes in place and bring your company to the next level. And I think the most important thing that you can get out of all of these system is knowing what you are going to do and knowing what you are not going to do, like a clear focus around your actions.
Awesome. That's great. Yeah. Knowing where you're going. That was awesome. Maximilian Fleitman, Richmond View Ventures, basetemplates.com. Thank you so much for your time today and all of your wisdom around raising capital for entrepreneurs. That's amazing. Thank you for serving us and your leadership in such an amazing way.
Yeah, it was a great talk. Thank you so much, Steve.
You're welcome. And that will conclude this episode of the Entrepreneur's Journey for Funding. You've been listening to the Pitchology Podcast. We invite you to check out the Pitchology course and workshop online, along with other helpful content at pitchology.ai. That's .ai, not .com. Thank you for joining us today.